Hi, friends. Welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today, we're joined by University of Louisiana President Jim Henderson. He's president of the Louisiana System Schools. He was born in Shreveport. He went to high school in Arkansas at Siloam Springs College, Northwestern State, got a master's at West Florida in human performance and technology. He tried to explain it to me, but it was too difficult. He went on to get a PhD at University of Maryland, served as chancellor of Bossier Parish Community College, became president of Northwestern State, and has now moved on to president of the University of Louisiana System, and he's been there 2 years. His wife is from Gaeta, and they have three kids, one of whom is an undergraduate at UL Lafayette. So welcome to the show.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
You're in town for the University of Louisiana System Conference, which this year is being held at UL Lafayette. How long has the system been having these conferences, and what's the focus and rationale for them?
So this is the second annual conference. We call it the For Our Future Conference. We started this right after I became president of the system. We thought it was a great way to bring faculty and staff from all across the state, all across our system, for collaboration, for affinity groups, to talk about some systemic initiatives. And the first conference went off without a hitch, and we got great feedback from participants and said, why haven't we done this for decades? And so we're going to do it for decades.
Well, I was at that first conference, and I have to say it was a really good experience. Are there positive effects that member schools have from getting together in these kind of conferences, and what are some of the things that you gain?
You know, I think they range from the intangibles that you find that maybe some of the things that you've been struggling with or the challenges you've seen, you find out that, guess what, there's people in other parts of the state and other institutions that are dealing with the same thing, or even better yet, they've dealt with the same thing and found a solution. I think people find new friendships. They find new networking opportunities. And if you look at some of the collaborative approaches we've taken to solving some pretty complex problems, I think it goes back to developing that spirit of fellowship amongst our institutions.
Now, just to clarify things for those who might not know, there are 9 schools that make up the LA system. So these schools are UL Lafayette. I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you to name them. Louisiana Tech, UNO, McNeese, ULM, Southeastern, Grambling, Northwestern, and Nichols, I think, are the 9 schools.
Collectively, we serve more than 92,000 students.
The largest university system in Louisiana.
And one of the largest in the nation.
Really?
And so it is it's been a lot of fun. It's a lot of challenges. And I get to work with 9 university presidents, so the university presidents actually report to me.
Should I say condolences? I'm not sure.
You know, there's no egos among university presidents. That's the great thing.
But really? I have to tell you, I find that hard to believe.
It's true. No, I have to tell you, they have been very responsive to any ideas that I put forward. They've been very generative in their own ideas coming forward. And I believe that we're going to reap some tremendous benefits from these 9 distinct institutions, each with its own history, its own culture, its own mission. Working collaboratively, the synergies that you develop from that are very impactful.
I can imagine. I got called by a university president just the other night, a retired one. It was. It's always interesting to hear from people who have been in the game but then kind of stepped aside. I'm not going to mention his name on air, though. I think that would be – sorry to tease you with that. Tell me, what makes these 9 schools – I would imagine each has their flavor. And I know it must be tough for you because you're not supposed to show favoritism. But, I mean, I imagine that the 9 schools are each trying to make the point that in their own way they're special.
Well, they are. And you know, when you look at Louisiana and the pockets of culture that we have across the state, the variety of cultures we have, and I think we're reflected – those cultures are reflected in our institutions. And, you know, many of these institutions are in excess of 100 years old. My alma mater, Northwestern State, is its site is the oldest permanently dedicated site to higher education in Louisiana. Rich history right there in Natchitoches, the oldest permanent settlement in Louisiana. 10 years later, they opened the Louisiana Industrial Institute in Ruston, and the president at Northwestern State wrote a letter to the state legislature and said that the Industrial Institute will be a perpetual menace to the normal school. And,
wow.
You know, so that rivalry was created in 1894.
Oh, my goodness.
And so much history has occurred since then. You know, Grambling State, 1901, farmers in the Piney Woods in North Louisiana, farmers of color, reached out to the Tuskegee Institute and said, listen, we need an institution of higher learning. And they sent Charles P. Adams there, and they opened the doors in 1901. Every one of our institutions has great history. This institution, UL Lafayette, And I've learned more about that history, the name changes, and you know, whether people love those or like or dislike them. You know, I think there's still people in Natchitoches that would love to go back to the normal school. That's, you know, that's part of who we are. It's part of our fiber. Each one brings a certain flavor to the system, and when you put them together, it creates this gumbo, this something that is so much better than any of its individual parts. That's been the funnest part of leading the system.
Now, would you say that each of these schools is somewhat individual? Would you say that students can really find a school that fits them in terms of size or in terms of focus, in terms of program offerings or things like that?
I think it's exactly correct. And what we've tried to do in these last 2 years is build this notion of system that doesn't detract from the individualism of any of the schools. I think that individualism is that distinctiveness is what makes us so much stronger than we would be. And so it would be artificial to try to blur those lines. But in those areas where we can be collaborative and where we can focus on global types of issues, that strength gives us a strong foundation to create some great solutions.
Now, in terms of collaboration, I mean, in some sense, isn't this the poverty of necessity? You know, the state has underfunded higher education, and certainly higher education doesn't stand still. So is greater collaboration in part a response to the state kind of abandoning some of its responsibilities with regard to higher education?
I think so. And, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. But that said, I think you saw some relationships that were being formed even before the downturn in the state fiscal situation. You know, we went through almost a decade of the largest, deepest budget cuts to higher education the nation has ever seen. These last 2 years, we've been celebrating stability, right? Hey, we didn't get cut again. Now, we're still funded at the 48th or 49th lowest level on a per-student basis in the nation, but we're celebrating that. And with that stability, even with that environment of stability, I think you've seen those seeds of collaboration we planted during the times of scarcity. They're starting to blossom now, and we're really starting to see the impact of that.
Well, in the past, the state funded the system, and I'm using a rough average, so about 65% in systems, and the individual schools came up with, you know, 35% of their funding. And so, but then that flipped, and so now the state's down. In some cases, some institutions are as low as 20-25% in the states, and then everything else is self-funded. So that means student tuitions, private enterprise, partnerships, other kinds of things. What did that period of downsizing due to all the universities in your system?
You know, I think that universities handled that downsizing in different ways, probably reflective of their own situations. Some got much stronger. They responded quickly. They were serving markets that were able to respond to new initiatives. Other schools struggled with that quite a bit, and some are just now coming out of that. You look at University of New Orleans, the latest addition to our system that came from the LSU system. You know, they had the double whammy. They went through the catastrophe of Hurricane Katrina. And then you follow that just a few years on with the start of the budget cuts. But under their new leadership, with John Nicklow as president there, they're starting to see a new life, if you will. They're starting to – the enrollment declines have diminished. They've actually started to rebound a little bit. They're doing some things in the market. They've created some programming. So I think that they hit bottom, and now they're experiencing a rebirth. And you can go around the state and make examples of that. The renaissance that's occurring at Grambling State is phenomenal. To watch Rick Gallo, who is the son of Grambling, who literally grew up in a house directly across the street from the main gate of Grambling State. You think he's got an interest in the success of that institution? Jay Clune, our new president.
Well, his mother, as I remember, his mother was president
there. Mildred Gallo. Yeah, Dr. Yeah. Gallo is a wonderful, wonderful woman. But Jay Clune, the new president at Nicholls State, graduated from Nicholls State. He grew up in Houma, went to Vanderbilt High School, but went on to LSU, got his PhD in history, served in the Peace Corps, has been around the country, comes back home with this wealth of experience, but yet that affinity for homeland. And is doing some amazing work at Nicholls State. And you can just go around the state and point to these examples. Now, this is truly the best time to be part of the higher ed enterprise in Louisiana because it's just going to get better.
Wow, that's a very positive view. And I certainly hope you're right.
Keeps me from crying.
And also, you know, our president, T. Joseph, who is from here, right? And so, you know, you get a lot of this hometown pride about the different universities in the different areas. Just out of curiosity, why didn't Northwestern didn't jump at the chance to be University of Louisiana at Natchitoches? ULN. Well,
you know, when you have so many people, number one, their colors are purple and white, and there's another, you know, much less impactful school in the United States that has purple and white as their colors. It's called Northwestern. It's in Evanston, Illinois.
Right.
And so, you know,
that would be a little confusing almost,
but,
right?
But the branding possibilities with something like that are fantastic. And, you know, Northwestern State is, if the Red River had not changed course and that Cane River Lake that goes right through downtown Natchitoches had been the main channel of the Red River, Shreveport would be Natchitoches, right? So that was the Northwest population center of what became the state of Louisiana.
Interesting. Yeah. So that, yeah, I've always wondered why that area was settled first.
That's
it seems,
right.
Yeah. What will it take for Louisiana to reinvest in higher education? I mean, I know you spend some time talking to the legislature and do all that, but I mean, is there any pressure to like make the university systems here whole?
Beyond developing this notion of system, when I came into this current role, one of our key focuses was on messaging, telling the story of higher education, and it's a powerful story. Now you can look at the national level, and you see any number of opportunities for people to criticize higher education, whether it's the indoctrination that comes from all of our liberal faculty in the classroom. You know, I remember when I was a student, I had faculty members that had decidedly different ideologies and philosophies of life, political philosophies than I did. And none of them ever tried to indoctrinate me. But, you know, they made me think. And they made me translate that thinking into the written word. And they made me a better person. Understood why I believed the things that I did. And they didn't contradict them or brainwash, right? They helped develop me as a person. And that's really the whole reason we exist is to improve the human condition. Having that conversation sometimes is very difficult. We always want to vocationalize our work. And I did a lot of work in workforce development, and I understand that talent development is key if we're going to be successful economically. But we've got something in our favor now, and it's what we used to call the future of work. The future of work is now. And you're starting to see this need for a developed talent and this age-old reason for the existence of higher education, developing intellect, developing, seeking truth, seeking knowledge. We're starting to see those come together, right? And they become the same thing. I think it bodes well for all of us.
Well, I want to follow up on that comment, but I want to do it right after these messages. We're talking to President Jim Henderson of the University of Louisiana System, and we will talk some more in just a second.
KRVS listeners pay attention to quality. They look for quality in their work and in their daily lives. If your business cares about quality customers, look to KRVS. Call 337-482-1437 to find out how to promote your business on KRVS.
This is John Broussard, better known as JB.
And Melvin Caesar, better known as MC. And we want you to join us each week for the Zydeco et Passale program for the best in Creole and Zydeco music in the area and even in the world.
Zydeco et Passale, coming up Saturday morning at 8, right here on KRVS.
Hello and welcome back. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. We're on Bayou de Beltway. Today we're talking with President Jim Henderson. He is president of the University of Louisiana System. As we went to break, we were talking about the future of work, and the president was making some connection between the future of work and the kind of things that higher education is doing right now. And so let's talk about that explicitly. What is the UL system and all its nine system schools doing to address work today and the changing nature of work?
Well, when you think about how the advances in technology, the ubiquity of automation, the emergence of artificial intelligence, the way that has transformed the work we do every day. And one example that I like to use is of administrative assistants. You know, 65% of administrative assistants do not have a bachelor's degree. 90% of job postings for administrative assistants today require a bachelor's degree. Now, I saw one in an article written recently. Someone was calling that degree inflation. In other words, we're requiring degrees for jobs that used to not require degrees. But do you think about that, how that role has changed? You know, my assistant is not typing in names on a Rolodex card for me. You know, we've got this little thing called the iPhone. It's just a little over 10 years old now. Communication has become so much easier to keep track of all these things. What my administrative assistant is now doing is making critical decisions that affect the future of our system every single day. Every transaction she has with a constituent or a stakeholder involves critical thinking, problem solving, effective communications. That's why she has a master's degree and is pursuing a doctorate. That's the role she plays. We're seeing this happen across job categories. There's a lot of information out there about how automation is going to replace jobs, and there's a lot of disagreement about that. To be honest, I don't believe it's going to replace a lot of jobs. It's going to change the nature of those jobs. It's going to change a lot of the task involved with those jobs. If your task is repetitive, if it can be predicted, a machine is going to be doing that. But if you add value to it in terms of critical thinking and problem solving and communications, then you're going to be just fine. And that's the core competency that comes with every degree that we produce in the University of Louisiana system, whether it's an engineering degree or whether it's a performing arts degree. You come out prepared for this future of work.
Let's talk about that just a little bit. So we hear a lot about connecting higher education with work and trying to make sure that what students are learning at higher education institutions have a real world, what they call a real world payoff. And oftentimes that's expressed in the emphasizing STEM majors over majors that may seem less practical. And I'm English history, but then also sciences like physics and chemistry and so on. What do you think about this debate, the STEM, science, technology, engineering versus humanities and the natural science?
Well, I think the debate is misplaced, and I think it's a little bit short-sighted. Certainly in STEM degrees, you're learning these core competencies as well. But if you told me that I need to go create an organization tomorrow, and I don't have any idea what that organization is, and I need to hire 10 people, I'm going to go to the music department. Or I'm going to go to the theater department because I'm getting people that know how to communicate, to work as a team, to solve problems, sometimes problems that come up that are completely unpredicted, and they're in the middle of performing their task, and they have to perform that task at the same level or even higher. So you think about the skill sets that are embedded in all of the programs we have, whether they're liberal arts or into the heavy STEM fields like engineering. You know, if you mentioned physics. I hope physics is okay because my son is majoring in physics and math right here at UL Lafayette. But we have these core competencies that develop the whole person in addition to learning some very specific discipline skills, if you will. But that's one of the conversations we want to have going forward because I don't think we've done a good job as a higher ed enterprise articulating core competencies and explaining to especially the general public of how these core competencies prepare you for life and career success. They're going to become ever more essential. We've got to do a much better job articulating that, identifying those competencies, assessing those competencies, and ensuring when someone has a degree from one of our institutions that anyone who looks at that degree knows this is a person that is going to be valuable to my organization.
I heard you say a couple of things. One of them is that core competencies is a focus. So if you think about, okay, it's a degree in English, but what does that mean really? Does that mean you've now developed, if you have that degree, it's evidence that you developed some core competencies, your writing, reading, communication, creative thinking, those kinds of things. So that's the focus. For some people, a tough sell. I mean, it requires people to change their view of what a job is all about. You know, you're no longer making widgets. You're being creative.
Yeah, I had not long been in the office of president at Northwestern State, and an appointment showed up on my calendar. I said, well, who is this? And they said, it's an alum. I did a little research. She graduated from the Scholars College, got a master's degree in English at Northwestern State with an emphasis in poetry. And I said, well, she's coming to look for a job or a recommendation. She lost something. No, she came in with a check. You see, she's the vice president of a Fortune 300 oil and gas company in Southwest Texas. Excuse me, Southeast Texas. She's the vice president of change management. And as I started thinking about it, I said, you know what? Who would be better prepared to lead change management than someone who is an expert in poetry? Because all she's done is think in abstract ways and find different ways to communicate ideas and bring these these ambiguous ideas down to a way that someone can understand them and grasp them. She's been phenomenally successful. And then I thought about it for a while, I wasn't surprised at all.
That's funny. What a story. Mm-hmm. You know, you also said something about diversity and indicated that all the studies today talk about if you're going to put together a group of people that you got to – the best thing you could possibly do for getting productivity out of that group is to make sure that all those people aren't alike, mm-hmm. and that, you know, you need wide diversity in a number of different things. And I'm certainly not just referring to racial or ethnic or gender diversity here, but diversity of experience, yeah. and background and training and everything else. So that seems to be the way the world works in terms of what's
– So you think about Louisiana. Now, Louisiana has a distinction of being the only state in the United States that does not have an ethnic majority, right? That's the diverse mixture that is Louisiana. But when you look at attainment rates, educational attainment rates and rates in socioeconomic categories, you can tell that there's certain populations that have been more successful than others. I think we're the answer to that. But we've got to find ways to bring education to populations that have long been underserved, right, to give them the tools necessary to move up in the socioeconomic strata, if you will, prepare them for life and career success. And it's not just demographic diversity. It's people that hail from rural areas, people that, you know, we've been an agricultural economy since our very beginning. And we're always going to have an agricultural component to it. But sometimes that leads to a devaluation of formal education, which is going to be ever more critical to success going forward. Well, so we've got to find ways to serve more diverse audiences. The only way that you can serve a diverse audience is if you have diverse teams that are trying to serve those audiences. So there's a real strong moral component to the diversity push. But when you have a moral imperative that combines with a true business interest of serving more students, of being more valuable to your employer community, and the two of them come and they coalesce perfectly together, that's a perfect storm for doing something. It's great when business imperatives and moral imperatives are the same.
And perhaps that brings up, what is it, the competitive initiative, the initiative to get people who have dropped out, yeah. or who have not finished, they're adults now, they're working, but they don't have college degrees, the COMPETE initiative, I think.
COMPETE Louisiana, yeah. is an mm-hmm. intervention that we've got that brings adults that have been out of college for at least 2 years, that have some college credits but don't have a degree, and find ways to bring them back into the fold so they can complete that journey that they started. And you think about the adult student and the challenges that they face, whether it's family challenges, whether it's work challenges. And the first thing that you might have – what they do when they go on to the website to apply is they've got to find their shot records, immunization records. You know, I don't know where mine are if you ask me to find them. It would probably take me a year and a half. They don't have a year and a half, right? We're going to provide a concierge service that knocks down all of the barriers, that gets rid of the red tape, and it works with this student from the day that they express interest until they walk across the stage with a degree. We think it's a great intervention. The key is, though, it's not a panacea. The real work occurs at these nine institutions, with every faculty member and every staff member being empowered to work their craft, to have an impact on students, and ensure those students are successful. When you can add to them systemic interventions like COMPETE LA, I think that's just going to make us that much more effective.
Absolutely. We're talking today with President Jim Henderson, who's president of the University of Louisiana System 9 Schools. Let's talk about systems just a little bit. Louisiana has had a four system, I think, system of governance in higher education, the LSU system, Southern system, the University of Louisiana system, and then the community college system. It's been criticized for years of having too much management, too much system, and not enough production, not enough success. What's your view of all that? And are we overrun with systems, and do we need to have fewer systems, or what's the story?
You know, I think people just have a misunderstanding of what systems are. If you go over to Texas, Texas A&M is a system. Sure, they have their flagship campus in College Station, but they've got a campus in Corpus Christi and in Canyon, Texas, and the Texas Tech system, and University of Texas system, and the North Texas system. Now you go over to other states, like the state of Florida, which is often brought up as an example, where every single institution in Florida has its own gubernatorially appointed management board. Now, how much collaboration do you think occurs amongst those institutions? It probably does, but it's not because of their structure. It's in spite of their structure. North Dakota has a governor that was looking at educational reform, and he thought that this single board that they have in North Dakota was such an albatross that he wanted to divide it into a flagship system, a regional college system, and a system for the community technical colleges. It sounds like what we have here in Louisiana. I look at Tennessee, which had a single board. They just created 11 new boards to govern their system. Our issues are not about structure. Now, when you think about Louisiana, I think that we've just about got it right. We have a vertically integrated system associated with the flagship university, LSU, a land-grant university that has a two-year college, two regional colleges, the medical schools, the ag centers, and our flagship campus. And listen, we all have a vested interest in having a nationally competitive flagship university. That's what LSU should be. We also, because of our legacy, a legacy of difference, if you will, of separation, created a land-grant HBCU. It's the only historically black college and university system that exists anywhere on the planet. We have a system that manages all of our regional universities and our three statewide research universities, UL, Lafayette, Tech, and UNO. Then we have the community college system. Our systems are mission-driven. At the same time, we don't have this diverse, if you will, this disparate set of boards trying to govern the activities of any individual institution. So I think it's the perfect storm of having a streamlined administration, but at the same time being mission-focused. And if you want the real measure, just look at the cost per student that it takes to run higher education in Louisiana. 48th out of 50 states is pretty low cost. Some would argue we have the lowest unit cost of production. I would argue that we invest the least in developing our talent. But it's not a structural issue. It's one about valuing education and then putting our investment. You think about investment. The return on investment from the University of Louisiana system collectively is $10.9 billion annually. That came from an economic modeling specialist in international. External firm, they came in and did that analysis of us. $10.9 billion, one out of every 18 jobs in Louisiana is dependent upon the University of Louisiana system. That's return on investment. We think we can make it even more impactful.
Wow. Well, speaking of return on investment, the legislative session is about to start up.
It is.
It's going to start up April 8th this year. And I imagine that you are going to be going down to Baton Rouge and trying to make some points. What's on the hopper for this current legislative session?
Well, first, I'm grateful that it appears we're going to have a legislative session for only 45 days this year.
It's the fiscal session.
That's right. When you think about the innumerable sessions we had last year, I think I testified before committee more than 30 times.
Good grief.
Last year, telling this story about it, the work of our faculty and staff. This year we're going back and we're making this case. Last year it was about holding us stable and not doing further damage. Now it's about strategic reinvestment. We have got to do something to make us competitive in retaining faculty and recruiting faculty, developing faculty. That is the heart and soul of our institution. We've got to reinvest in that human capital, if you will. Second thing.
Can I just jump in a second?
Sure.
Go ahead. Do the second thing.
Well, the second thing is mandated costs. We have this mandated cost element that's right there. Every other agency in state government, when they have increases in mandated costs, it's part of the continuation budget. In higher education, we haven't been. For a decade now. That just needs to be a part of it. So then we're not taking student tuition dollars and retiring debt or paying pension costs. That's not what those dollars are for. Those are costs that were incurred by the state decades ago. State needs to step up and fund those and allow students the resources we get from students to fund their education.
Well, that's a message that I hope our legislators hear. We've been talking this morning with President Jim Henderson, who's president of the University of Louisiana System, 9 schools system. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Bonjour and hello. Listen to the Franco Mix at 9 p.m. on Thursdays with Drake Benoit LeBlanc, exclusively on KRVS 88.7. It's a formidable.
This is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.